House, please come to order. Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
Thirty-six present, four absent.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, Representative Eliason is excused from the call of the House today. I'll ask unanimous consent that other absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Our chaplain today is Pastor Johnny Reimer of the Auk Bay Bible Church. The House, please rise for prayer.
Let us pray. Our God and Heavenly Father, through Jesus Christ our Lord, we present our petitions to you this morning. We thank you, first of all, for your glory and majesty, your wisdom and power, and for your mercy, grace, and love which you extend to us. Grant to us the willingness to step out of our shell of pride to receive the blessings and benefits you wish to bestow upon us. We give thanks this morning for the privilege of living in the country of liberty. Deliver us from the misuse of that freedom. We intercede on behalf of our President and those who work together with him in the affairs of government. Grant to them discernment and wisdom for their task. We pray for our governor and those in him, for those in the legislature and others in various government positions. Grant for all the insight that each has a significant contribution to make, but that such a contribution is only significant as it ministers to the whole rather than mere self-conviction. Grant to us all the keen awareness of your genuine and personal concern for our individual welfare and the welfare of others.
Will Chief Clerk please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the Journal for the 15th day.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body approve the Journal as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 15th day.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, as I think probably all the members know, Representative Schaefer is ill and is in the hospital. I'll move at this time that he be excused from the call of the House for the balance of this week.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? Representative Miller.
Speaker, perhaps I should leave this introduction to a member from Anchorage, since the person I'm going to introduce is from that district. On the other hand, she has a statewide constituency, and I therefore think it's appropriate that any member of this House would introduce her. That's Terry McWilliams, who's the Director of Parks.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me pleasure to introduce two noted public servants, both serving with the Joint Federal State Land Use Planning Commission. Walt Parker is the state co-chairman, and also with him is Commissioner Esther Wanneke, and they're briefing various state officials today on everything we wanted to know about land use, and we're afraid to ask. Both Walt Parker and Esther Wanneke are in Gallery A.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, just a small correction. Mrs. Wanneke used to be on the staff of the commission, but she is now the federal co-chairman. She is the co-chairman with Mr. Parker.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. We're down to introduction of guests. Are there further guests for introduction to the chambers? If not, Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, it'll be a Republican caucus upon recess.
Speaker, may we be at ease again?
House, please stand at ease. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, at the request of the Minority Leader, I'll move at this time that we recess to the call of the Chair for purposes of the Republican caucus.
Hearing no objection, House is in recess. For the recess, we are down to introduction of guests. Are there any further guests for introduction to the chambers? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
Dear Representative Malone, enclosed please find a copy of the executive proclamation I signed January 21, 1978, proclaiming a condition of disaster emergency to exist in the village of Carlock. Assistance to the village will be continued to be coordinated by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. This coordination is already in progress. Thank you very much for keeping me aware of the conditions at Carlock and the concerns of your constituents. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has passed Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 68, and it is transmitted herewith for consideration. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 68 by Ziegler, Mielen, Poland, and Ray, relating to Alaskan participation in the Western States Legislative Forestry Task Force.
Resources.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on State Affairs has had House Joint Resolution 45, requesting assistance from the Alaska Forces Radio Network in covering the Arctic Winter Games, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Miles, McKinnon, Nakak, and Lethien. Having no recommendation, Kelly. House Joint Resolution Number 45 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 577, an act making a special appropriation to the Office of the Governor for costs of broadcasting the Arctic Winter Games with an effective date under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, McKinnon, Miles, Nakak, and Lethien. Mr. Kelly has no recommendation. House Bill 577 has a further referral to Finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions and citations.
There is a citation by Representative Cooper in memoriam Lee Metcalf, United States Senator from Montana. House Resolution Number 17 by Anderson, Guy, Akers, and Schaefer, relating to the size of food stamp allotments in the rural areas of Alaska.
Referred to the Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 93 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council for the Interim Committee on Subsistence Hunting and Fishing, relating to the creation of a State Subsistence Hunting and Fishing Committee.
Referred to the Special Committee on Subsistence and the Resource Committee.
House Joint Resolution Number 48 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council for the Interim Committee on Subsistence Hunting and Fishing, relating to legalizing hunting of migratory birds in the springtime.
Referred to the Special Committee on Subsistence and the Resources Committee.
House Joint Resolution Number 49 by the Rules Committee by request of the Interim Committee on Subsistence Hunting and Fishing. House Joint endorsing the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission Management Plan and urging its full support before the International Whaling Commission.
Referred to the Special Committee on Subsistence and Resources.
House Joint Resolution Number 50 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, relating to Local Boundary Commission Recommendation 1 of January 18, 1978, for annexation of territory to the City of Skagway.
Referred to the Committee on Community and Regional Affairs.
House Joint Resolution Number 51 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, relating to Local Boundary Commission Recommendation 2 of January 18, 1978 for annexation of territory to the Haines Borough.
Referred to the Committee on Community and Regional Affairs.
House Joint Resolution Number 52 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, relating to Local Boundary Commission Recommendation 3 of January 18, 1978 for annexation of territory to the City of Petersburg.
Referred to the Committee on Community and Regional Affairs.
House Joint Resolution Number 53 by Gardner, relating to reimbursement of Alaska advisors to salmon fisheries negotiation.
Resources.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of bills.
House Bill 673 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council for the Interim Committee on Subsistence Hunting and Fishing, an act creating a division of subsistence hunting and fishing.
We refer to the Special Committee on Subsistence and Resources.
House Bill 674 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council for the Interim Committee on Subsistence Hunting and Fishing, an act regionalizing the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game.
Refer to the Special Committee on Subsistence and Resources.
House Bill 675 by Malone and Cotton, an act relating to transfer of control of a certificated public utility and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Commerce Committee.
House Bill 676 by Haugen, Chatterton, Freeman, Nackack, and Rode, an act relating to the compensation of certain public officers and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the State Affairs and Finance Committees.
House Bill 677 by Anderson, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for a grant to the City of Dillingham for relocating a sanitary landfill and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and Finance.
House Bill 678 by Parr, an act relating to agricultural and industrial affairs.
State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Clerk, please read the first item on the daily calendar.
House Bill number 303 by Rudd, an act creating the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 303 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 303 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurred in by Gardner, Brown, Rudd, and Specking. Mr. Dankworth has no recommendation. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 303 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 303 Finance and that it do pass. No, it be reported back with individual recommendations. Signing do pass, Cooper, Meekins, Guy, Buchholz, and Duncan. Having no recommendation, Greening, Freeman, Haugen. Signing do not pass, Rode. Signing do not pass unless amended, Swanson. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection. Representative Anderson. Representative Cotton.
He just distributed copies of the Judiciary Committee substitute and the Finance Committee substitute. It should be on the members' desks.
Is there objection to the motion for adoption of the Finance Committee substitute? Hearing no objection, Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments to the committee substitute?
Amendment number 1 by Mrs. Rudd, page 4, line 7. Delete June 30, 1979. Insert June 30, 1983.
Representative Rudd.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Hearing no objection. Amendment is adopted. Does the clerk have further amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. Clerk, have further amendments to the committee substitute?
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Urien, page 4, line 8. Section 3, section 3950-200 is amended by adding new LL under 9 to read, parentheses LL, Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, parentheses 18-110-10.
Representative Urien.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There's objection, Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment is what used to be a former Representative Parker's boilerplate amendment, bringing the status of the Commission on Status of Women under the conflict of interest law. And I know we want them all to comply, just like other commissions, and therefore I'd ask you to adopt the amendment.
Representative Anderson, House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. Question before the House is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Is there further discussion? Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I don't see a need for the amendment, since the Commission on the Status of Women will not be an administrative or an executive body. It will simply be an information gathering body and a body which gathers and distributes information. I don't think that it's going to present any conflict situations for anyone. However, I do support the conflict of interest idea, and if the body feels as though that should the people who are going to be on this commission should be under that requirement, I don't have any real objection to it. But I think it's really unnecessary, since the commission will not be dealing with any real substantive activities.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, we have an awful lot of boards and commissions that fall underneath the conflict of interest law, and a lot of those people also think it's unnecessary. But we have brought them under there because they're in the political arena, and people out there want people to reveal where they get their money, and I think everybody should do that. We just like us, you know? Everybody's the same. We're all in the same ballpark, and that's the reason we passed the conflict of interest bill some years ago, and these people wish to serve, they should let us know where they're coming from.
Representative Buckle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment for the following reasons. The membership of the commission that is being established are people from all walks of life. Some of these people are low-income people. Some of them will come from the wealthy, educated class, and all kinds of people that will be involved in this. I think it will cause undue embarrassment on some of the members to disclose that they really don't have anything to disclose. And it's really a waste of time and waste of paperwork to do this sort of thing. Perhaps my argument in opposition of this amendment is not so logical, but I really feel that it is a great deal of unnecessary paperwork, unnecessary embarrassment to the members that will be selected. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
I'm embarrassed every year when I file my conflict of interest statement, so I think they should be too.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I think we're probably giving this amendment more time and attention than it needs. I feel kind of like Representative Rudd does. It's not going to create any great problem if we adopt it. However, just in reply to what the minority leader said, at the time we established the conflict of interest laws, we did select, at that time I think there was about 10, 12 particular commissions where there was a good apparent reason why they should be included. We excluded a great deal additional commissions and boards because there was no apparent reason. There was no apparent conflict that, for instance, if a person happened to have oil stocks in Exxon, there was no particular reason, using this as an example, why that would affect their vote any way at all on the matters coming before the Commission on the Status of Women. So, you know, it's not true that we put everybody. It's very apparent why we should be, as legislators, under the conflict of interest statutes. It's not apparent to me at all why the people who serve on this commission. And therefore, rather than clutter up the books with additional boards that have to be reported, rather than clutter up the time of the APOC, which has to monitor all of these, unless there's a really substantial reason shown to me why conflict is built in and where the conflict would be, I just kind of think it's a bother we don't need.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, the majority leader would have us believe that there are only 10 or 12 boards and commissions under the conflict of interest law. I suggest if you heard my amendment again, it was parent LL. We've gone through the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way down to the end of the alphabet. We've started over again, double A, double B, double C. We're down to double L. Now, there's a lot more than 12 letters in the alphabet. And we've already doubled up. We're going to make twice the alphabet. We have picked out almost everybody is under the conflict of interest law, and this commission, too, should be there.
Representative
Miller. Again, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to belabor it, but if the majority or minority leader had been listening attentively, I said when we established the law, we only put in 12 or 13. Since then, we have frequently added them as the need became apparent. And as the need has become apparent, we have finally come up to double L. frankly, I don't see any reason to add them just for the fun of adding double initials. If we want to do that, we can add triple initials. We can go up through quadruple L. And that's an L of a note, I think, Mr. Speaker. But that's a terrible joke. But, Mr. Speaker, you know, it's foolish for us to add them just to be adding them. Although, as I say, I think we're debating this much too long.
Representative Rudd.
I think I agree with Mr. Miller, but I've got to say one more thing. Looking through the list of the groups that are included in the conflict of interest law, most of them have substantial enforcement capabilities or substantial hearing capabilities, that sort of thing that the proposed commission doesn't have. I don't see in this list, on a cursory glance, for instance, Mr. Speaker, the governor's commission on the aging, which is another of the same sort of group that is being proposed here. There are all kinds of advisory committees and commissions on very specific subjects that aren't included now.
Is there further discussion? You ready for the question? Is a roll call vote being requested? Roll call vote on the question is requested. Question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? We'll have a roll call vote. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Eighteen yeas, 19 nays, 3 excused.
So amendment number 2 has not been adopted. So clerk, of further amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, while we're still in second reading, I'd like to inquire to the chair or to the clerk with regard to a matter that probably can be taken care of in engrossment. On page 2, line 16, I notice that there's a reference to a law by terms of the House bill under which it passed. And of course, legislative style would require that there be a reference to the law by session law or by statutory citation. Is it necessary to make an amendment to change that, or may I assume that that can be taken care of in engrossment?
In the opinion of the chair, no amendment is necessary. Representative Miller.
Speaker, if there are no further amendments, I'll ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 303 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The clerk, please read committee substitute for House Bill 303 amended.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 303 Finance amended by the Finance Committee, an act creating the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women.
House Bill 303 is before you. So further discussion, Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I think a review of the origins of this bill may be in order, especially for those members of the House who weren't here in 1976 when we first got involved in this. In that year, my bill calling for a study on the status of women in Alaska in the fields of education and employment, health, and the justice system passed the legislature. However, the study was funded at only one-eighth of the amount that the Human Rights Commission estimated it would take to do an adequate study. Also, the title of the study was changed to a preliminary study of the status of women in Alaska. Presumably, that was in recognition of the fact that since the funding had been cut so drastically that some sort of follow-up of the study would be needed. When the study was published in January of last year, it identified at least 17 specific topics which affect the lives of women in the state which need either initial study or further research and study. They ranged, those topics that were identified ranged from the problems of minority women to the availability of insurance for women, the needs of rural women, the problems of single parents who are usually but not always women, legal status of homemakers, sex bias in state mental health programs, and so on. Meanwhile, Mr. Speaker, a group of women in Anchorage and Fairbanks had been doing research on how state governments, how other state governments have come to grips with the tremendously varied forms of inequity which women experience. And they found that 41 other states have established commissions on the status of women, which can serve as a catalyst for information and action. The experience of other states, plus the knowledge that a cursory review of the status of women in Alaska has identified a number of substantial areas that need further work, led me to think that the best way to follow up on the preliminary study would be to establish a commission on the status of women in Alaska. So I introduced House Bill 303 last year. Briefly, the Commission on the Status of Women would consist of 9 members appointed by the governor to 2-year terms. The commission would research issues, serve as a clearinghouse of information, be a resource for various groups in the state, and make recommendations to the governor and the legislature. It should be emphasized that the commission would not have the power to make any changes on its own. It would not be an executive agency charged with administering state programs. It's not designed to set women apart or to protect women. It would, I believe, help women get their fair piece of the action in all aspects of Alaska life. Mr. Speaker, I think something needs to be said about the way the women of Alaska, and a lot of men too, have responded to the preliminary study and then to the proposal to establish a commission on the status of women. Mr. Speaker, if ever there was an idea whose time has come, it was the whole idea of trying to do something about the status of women in Alaska. The demand for copies of the preliminary report has been incredible. All of the originally printed 1,250 copies are gone, and we have in our hands now requests for 850 more copies. Teachers and organizations have used it. Dozens of speeches have been based on the report. Hundreds of minutes of radio and television time, hundreds of inches of newspaper space have been devoted to it. The response has been truly amazing. Then, of course, at the statewide International Women's Year meeting in May of last year, which was attended by about 700 Alaska women, the establishment of a commission on the status of women was voted to be the top priority of the women of the state. A brief statement about the fiscal note on the bill. The fiscal note is $138,000, and I have a copy here if anyone wants to ask more questions about it. Thank you very much.
Representative Urien.
I have a question on the fiscal note. I also have a copy of that before me, Mr. Speaker. It does show $138,000, which is a revised figure up from $111,000 as originally submitted. I know the rule that we have requires that a bill that is a spending bill, the rule says the fiscal note shall have the amount of money you'll spend in this current fiscal year plus 2 subsequent years. Now, we've adopted an amendment on this floor that extends the life of this commission by several years, yet we have no fiscal note to cover those subsequent years. I wonder if we're in violation of our rules if we pass this bill today. Possibly it should be sent back to the Finance Committee, who undoubtedly did not have a chance to consider the extended life of the commission.
Representative Greening.
Just one point on that amendment that the minority leader claims extended the life. All it does is set a sunset provision. The life can only be extended by each act of the legislature each year it considers the budget. So the provision is only a sunset provision.
Representative Meekins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to support this bill. I do support the bill. And I've supported many of the issues that have been brought forth by Representative Rudd, and following those programs that have been established and the law changes throughout the last year, I found that, in my view, they've really made a tremendous start in improving the situation for many of Alaska's residents. In fact, in some cases, we've alleviated to at least a small degree some very tragic situations which otherwise would not have been addressed. And in other cases, at least alleviated some hardships that people should not have to undergo, and now at least do not have to in some cases. This is another example, I think, of the ongoing effort that I feel Representative Rudd should be very much commended for. It is, I think, these kinds of issues, that is, individual rights and the concern with individual rights, which really distinguishes our system of government from all the kinds that have been tried in the history of the world and haven't been very successful, and in addition haven't been very, very worthwhile and something that we would want to emulate. In fact, I think it is our commitment to fairness and to a sense of justice that is really the genius of our political system, not so much our rule by the majority, but our commitment to that there are individual rights that cannot be abridged either by business, by government, or by other entities. And these are the kinds of issues, I think, that we can all support, and I hope we do in this bill. This commission would set the pace for that kind of a review of things and try to encourage the changes that are necessary in order to guarantee to people that they can live with the rights that our society proposes that they have.
House, please stand at ease. Back to order. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak in favor of this bill. Mr. Speaker, Alaska's been progressive in ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment and revising our laws to reflect equality under the laws for everybody. But the problem, Mr. Speaker, has been an attitude, and I think that's where the commission would be important. I think the commission would bring to light the gross inequalities in the workplace, the divorce court, the credit market, and even in the home. Mr. Speaker and fellow members, I urge your support of this bill.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I hope not to be able to speak on this today, but I guess I have to. When we were talking about this 1/8 funding, I think that the original sponsor of that study will remember that I was one of those that was very supportive. The funding was cut. We still got a book here of over 300 pages, you know. This, according to the bill, this commission is supposed to implement the recommendations in that study. That's kind of a lot of implementing. Mr. Speaker, number of years before I ever came into this body, I was very active in a civil liberties group, and the only year we ever had a lobbyist down here in Juneau, we gave her, I will repeat her, the primary mission was to work on this, getting the Human Rights Commission law expanded to give greater rights for women, which it did not do at the time. It only covered a couple of things. It covered employment at the time, and that was about it. It didn't cover such things as housing and various other things. I think my record of supporting equal rights for women is pretty clear. Mr. Speaker, I guess the question comes about as to how do we do this best and what purpose is this commission going to serve? Mr. Speaker, I will be very happy to support the same amount of money being given to the Human Rights Commission so they can do a better job of enforcing the law. Mr. Speaker, if anyone will bring to me an instance in which women are discriminated against by law, I'll have a bill in as fast as the Legislative Affairs Agency can draft it. Mr. Speaker, I think that a commission such as this is really a confirmation, a reaffirmation, a fixing into law of a paternalistic approach that women do not have equal rights. And Mr. Speaker, as one who believes that they are entitled to equal rights and that under the law they have equal rights, and if they don't have it, we ought to change it, I cannot support this bill.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in what for me is a very difficult situation because obviously I'm a woman. I thought today maybe I should have come in black because and wear a black hat because I'm riding in as the proverbial bad guy. This is a pretty tough thing for me to face. For years I've stood up and voiced a strong opposition to boards and commissions that proliferate to either get federal money or to do a job that the state agency should be doing. In this case, this is a bill to do the job that a state agency should be doing. The Human Rights Commission has the mechanism and the power to conduct all of these studies, to make all of these recommendations, not just for women, but for all people who have a problem. I was elected not just by women, although certainly they were a substantial portion of my constituency and still are, I would hope, but I was elected by men, by natives, by blacks, by Filipinos, by people of all varied ethnic backgrounds, and I feel a compelling need to serve their problems as well. If we would take upon us the responsibility given to review the state agencies, to see that they are matching the needs of the people in our districts, then we would see that we could handle this and other problems by giving additional monies, staff, to the Human Rights Commission. I feel that because of the framework under which they exist is more powerful than would be the commission, they would be able to do a more effective job, and that's where the need lies. If we set up a commission just to handle women's problems, we'll remove women from the forum of being part of all of it and give them the old Southern separate but equal doctrine. It didn't work in the South. I don't think it would work effectively here. I hope that those that are listening to me have listened to the extent that because I stand up against the bill, I do not refute what anyone has said who has stood up before me. The needs are very real. And denied jobs because I was a woman. Of course, made the coffee because I was a woman, and I don't drink it. Being single has brought on some different types of discrimination because I'm away from the social norm. Naturally, I've not suffered as many have, and I am aware that they have, cannot empathize without having lived it. But I implore that they hear me and realize that I'm not speaking against them. I'm speaking for them in what I feel could be a more effective way of accomplishing what would be better for all of us. Thank you.
Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I speak not just a member of the minority groups, but as a woman. I have been blessed and fortunate that I have not been discriminated against in my long life. Not too often anyway that I have noticed it tremendously. But I know that my colleagues, my friends, people in the minority groups have suffered quite a bit, especially the women. I have received many complaints at many, many occasions where people, the women, have had problems in obtaining jobs, in getting better education, in maintaining their homes. A lot of times I have experience sorrow because of the lack of opportunities of these people. There were times I myself experienced some difficulty, not just in Alaska, but in other parts of the country. But I say I have been blessed and I've been fortunate, but the women out there who have not been as fortunate as I am should have the same opportunity to be able to do the things I'm able to do. And therefore, I do support this bill, and I hope my colleagues here will vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I think Representative Smith has raised a point that needs to be talked about a little bit as to whether or not the Human Rights Commission should or would be the proper arena for this kind of effort. They certainly do have the power to do this kind of thing. I think it's interesting that they haven't, and that they've never asked for the money to do it. I also want to point out, Mr. Speaker, that the Human Rights Commission meeting last February voted unanimously to support the idea of an independent status of women commission. That is, the Human Rights Commission Commission on the Status of Women. The Human Rights Commission is basically complaint-oriented these days. They're working darned hard and doing a very good job of enforcing the laws against discrimination. And all of their efforts are oriented towards receiving and making determinations on complaints of discrimination. To go into the area of studying and gathering information and so on would be an entirely new area for them, and in fact probably would cost the same amount that it was setting up an independent commission would cost.
Representative Nakak.
Mr. Speaker, at the time that it's appropriate, I call the House.
House has been called on the question.
We be at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. All members not excused are now present. Remind the members that under our new rules, a call is not satisfied until the issue that the call was placed on is disposed of by the House. The presence of the unexcused members does not satisfy the call. So the House will remain under a call on this issue until it's lifted or the bill is disposed of. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I just wish to speak on the bill about one thing that's been brought up here, that maybe the Human Rights Commission could do this job. And I think that there are some problems that are more pervasive in society that are problems for women than that the Commission on Human Rights could deal with. And I would just use one example that I'm aware of. We have a lot of single women in this state who have children. And that's just the reality of life in Alaska as it is in the rest of the country. And it's a fact that many of these women work. They work at full-time jobs. And yet, because of the way our system of economics is organized in this state and the rest of the country, they can't even do the things that most normal families would do, such as purchase a home or pay their rent. They work at full-time jobs, and yet they can qualify for welfare. And that isn't something we're going to change by changing a state law or having the Human Rights Commission court over some issue. It's a more pervasive problem than that. And there's going to have to be some fundamental changes in society. And I think this proposed commission could work on that problem and a lot of others that are more similar that we don't have any tools to work with.
Make a floor speech. Unfortunately, my colleague from Fairbank, Representative Parr, has given my sentiments first on the Hall Road and now on this commission on the status of women. I come out of a profession, journalism, in which it's been very disturbing. Women have traditionally been very much underpaid compared to men, and I know when I resigned a job not too long ago in Fairbanks at Radio TV station, the management didn't want to give the job to a woman, and when they finally agreed they had no choice, they wanted to pay her considerably, about half what I was making, and this has historically been true in the field of journalism, and it's very unfortunate. However, I think we're taking a step backward and by creating a separate commission. I think that we can find our remedies under law. I think we have identified the problems. They're many and they're serious. I think we do have the mechanism in our government to enforce the laws that we create. I don't think we have any to reiterate a point, a great problem with knowing what the inequities are with women. I think that where the law doesn't presently treat them properly, then we should draft legislation and enact a new law. I'm afraid that if we create a commission on the status of women, that it will become a forum for some extremist viewpoints. We'll be debating lesbianism, and we'll be driving people away from a movement that has accomplished a lot of good for women. I'm going to vote against it.
Is there further discussion? Representative Dankworth.
Mr. Speaker, I think there's good political advice, as I just heard from one member, that it's best to sit down and be quiet, particularly on an election year and when we're talking about what might be labeled as a motherhood issue. I think that that's what we're talking about from a political standpoint. I know a lot of them, I certainly have, and I'm trying to be honest. I've weighed this issue from a political standpoint, and I think some of them may be voting part that feel that way. But I'll tell you what causes. I agree with this bill in principle. I do agree with Representative Parr and other speakers that we have, by already established organizations such as Human Rights, a great deal of the machinery, not all of it, but a great deal of the machinery to handle a lot of these problems. But where I'm in conflict is, in for myself, and is that, you know, some of us made commitments when we came to Juneau that we were going to stop the spread and the growth of this bureaucracy. That every time somebody had a problem, that we wouldn't create a new agency and a new commission, a new task force, new committee. When is this going to stop? It's easy to vote for this because politically it's probably sound, and I believe in the principle. But it's in conflict with those of us who say that task forces, committees, commissions on everything, getting more federal funds, hiring more employees, isn't necessarily, I don't think, going to solve that many problems. And those elected officials that come down here, if we need this type of law, and if there's anything that we can identify that's not in the Human Rights Commission's authority to enforce this, I'd be willing to do it. And I grant that there's some things that have been spoken to that they're just, as I think Representative Gardner said, that we won't be able to put in there. But I hope that the attitude and the spirit of government is such that even in that commission, that they will, to a great extent, address these problems. So for that reason, you can't wear two hats. And for myself, while I agree with it in principle, I do believe that those of us who say we're not going to keep letting this bureaucracy spread and spread in commissions and task forces and committees have got to somewhere say stop. And for me, I said that I was going to do that, and for that reason, I'm going to vote against the bill.
Representative Rudd?
Mr. Speaker, the argument that the growth of government and the proliferation of commissions should be stopped is one which I subscribe to often myself. And in fact, that is the reason why I've supported the idea of putting a sunset provision on this commission so it doesn't go on and on forever, because I believe that the problems can be solved within 5 years, and I think it can be done, and there will be no more need for the commission. I believe that that is true, and I hope that it will turn out to be true. However, Mr. Speaker, I have to disagree with Representative Dankworth when he objects to the creation of this commission on the basis that we shouldn't allow proliferation of government. Mr. Speaker, one of the things that makes me proudest about our nation is our ability to try to solve our problems. We don't always succeed, and we aren't always successful, but we do try. I grew up, Mr. Speaker, in the Jim Crow South, and when I travel through that area now, I'm amazed, and I can hardly believe what I'm seeing, that there in the change in condition in the last 20 years, because this nation put on a monumental effort to end discrimination against blacks in the 60s and in continuing into the 70s. And that happened because government responded to felt needs of people. and the problems that had been festering for generations rose to the surface of society, and the government, the legislature, the executive, the courts responded. The same sort of peaceful revolution is happening now with the Alaska Native people in this legislature and others supporting their efforts to stop the confiscation of their lands, and now to maintain the cultural identity of those people through bilingual education and through subsistence hunting. Mr. Speaker, this nation does try to solve its problems, and I'm not going to deny that stopping the proliferation is a good idea, but when we have a problem that has been presented to us, which needs solutions, I don't think we should back away from that problem. This legislature, and I personally, I don't think have been found wanting in any of the areas that I've outlined. And I don't think we should be found wanting today simply because we want to stop the growth of government. We have a problem on our hands. We have people who are crying for relief. We ought to listen to them.
Further discussion? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I was pretty concerned about this bill when I heard it was going to be on the calendar today, and I haven't been feeling well lately, and so I got out of a sick bed this morning, and I counted some surveys I had sent out, not to steal any of Representative Phillips' thunder, in District 8, and that's in Anchorage, Mountain View, Muldoon, Eagle River, Chugiak. Mr. Speaker, I've received 183 of these surveys back to date, and I got up this morning and counted them. And the question I asked was, should Alaska establish a commission on the status of women to deal with areas such as discrimination, sexual bias, etc.? Yes, no, or undecided? I think, Mr. Speaker, that's a pretty straightforward question. The response I received back so far is this: 62% say no, 26% say yes, 12% are undecided. Mr. Speaker, a previous speaker indicated that this was an idea whose time has come. I know it for a fact that the time for this idea hasn't come in my home district, and I'm going to oppose the bill.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 303 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Twenty-five yeas, 13 nays, two excused.
So House Bill 303 has passed the House. Representative Meekins.
Speaker, could we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Hearing no objection, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I missed the people I was going to introduce, but I will note their presence, that they were here. Two people that are from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Elma Johnson, who's currently the finance director, and a new member of their staff, Robert Sullivan, who's now the newly appointed director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They're down here for hearings today and tomorrow on Alaska Housing Finance Corporation budget.
Clerk, please read the next item on the daily calendar.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 496, amended by the Commerce Committee, an act relating to public utilities. There were two amendments adopted.
Committee substitute for House Bill 496 is before the House in third reading. there any discussion? Ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 496 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll. Having a minor problem with the machine, we'll void the roll call vote. Will the House please stand at ease? House, please come back to order. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, apparently our machine has the same illness that's been plaguing Representative Carpenter and other members, so we're going to have to ask you to have a voice vote on that. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to call the House. If there are other members absent, we could go ahead with the citations, but perhaps we're all here now.
Call's been placed on the House on House Bill 496. I believe all members not excused are present now. Due to problems with the paper feed and the machine, we're going to have to take a voice roll call vote on House Bill 496. Question is, shall House Bill 496 pass the House? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Yes.
Byrne?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Bradley?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Buchholz?
Yes.
Carpenter?
No.
Chatterton?
No.
Cotton?
Yes.
Cooper?
Yes.
Dankworth?
No.
Duncan?
Yes.
Eliason? Freeman?
No.
Gardner? Greening?
Yes.
Guy?
Aye.
Haugen?
No.
Hayes?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Lethien?
No.
Loveseth?
No.
McKinnon?
Yes.
Meekins?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Nackack?
Yes.
Osi?
No.
Osterbeck?
Yes.
Parr?
Aye.
Phillips?
Nay.
Rode? Rudd?
Yes.
Schaefer? Smith?
No.
Snyder?
Yes.
Swanson?
Yes.
Urien?
No.
Akers?
Yes.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes. House, please remain in order.
22 yeas, 16 nays, 2 excused.
Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please announce final total.
22 yeas, 16 nays, 2 excused.
So House Bill 496 has passed the House. Does that bill carry an effective date section? When taking a roll call vote or taking a vote in these chambers, the rules require that members refrain from talking and moving around during the roll call so that there is no confusion. And while we don't frequently have to take a voice roll call vote, I ask the indulgence of the members while the roll is being called.
in memoriam of Richard A. Jansen, as requested by Representative Clark Green and Representative Peter Lovesey.
The citation has been placed in all members' desks, and I would urge at this time the House adopt citation for Richard A. Jansen.
Would you place a motion, Representative Green?
I move that we adopt the citation.
Is there any objection? Representative Bradley?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I certainly didn't have an objection, but I just wanted to say a few words. I don't mean to...
So did I, but go ahead.
Be rude or anything. I just wanted to say that Mr. Jensen was a constituent of ours in District 8, and he lived in my neighborhood, and he was very nice to me and allowing me going door to door to come into the house and visit with him. And the only thing I can remember about the house is they were very proud of some puppies they had, and of course it's and those are the sort of little human things you remember about a guy. And he was they were very cordial to me and were supporters of him. At least a number of us in the district, and just wanted to say I appreciate the people sponsoring the memorial resolution.
Representative Greening?
Just wanted to add, Mr. Speaker, that Dick Jansen, I'm talking about him with Representative Loveseth, we agreed that he was the type of person that should have been a member of the legislature. He had a quiet dignity about him, the ability to solve a problem with real intelligence and dignity. And he was, of course, a very devoted public servant, as the citation points out. And we're all going to miss him very much.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The record show that the citation was adopted unanimously. Brings us to the end of today's calendar. And down to unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, could we, I'll ask unanimous consent that we revert to messages from the other body.
Hearing no objection, revert to messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed House Bill number 59 amended, Handicapped of Individuals, and it is returned. This bill will be sent to enrolling. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
We'll revert to our regular order of business, then we're down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the House? Special orders. Are there any special orders? Representative Rudd?
Mr. Speaker, this morning three resolutions were introduced relating to recommendations of the Boundary Commission regarding annexations of land by the Haynesboro and by the City of Skagway and the City of Petersburg. I thought it would be well to explain to the members why those resolutions were introduced. Under the state law, the recommendations of the Boundary Commission, which are received by the legislature during the first 10 days of the session, go into effect unless we annul or vote against that recommendation within 45 days after receiving it. We have received those three recommendations from the Boundary Commission, and the committee will hold hearings week after next on those recommendations. The resolutions that were introduced are in the form of annulling, because if we wish to affirm the recommendations of the Boundary Commission, we don't have to do anything. But if we wish to annul the recommendations, then we must take action and pass those resolutions through the House. I just wanted to explain to people that the annulling resolution is not a decision by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee that those annexations should not take place. It is simply a way of dealing with the issues. As I said, we will have hearings week after next on the issues. At present, it looks as though the annexations in Haynes and Skagway are uncontested. It does seem that there is some question about the Petersburg ones, and we might have an interesting hearing on that one. I want to emphasize that the committee has made no judgment on any of those yet. Thank you.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I request a special privilege of the floor to discuss advertising.
No objection. You have the floor, Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I am in receipt of an advertisement was placed in the Friday, January 20th issue of the Washington Post. It's a full-page ad, Mr. Speaker, the cost of which I have no idea what it costs to advertise in a full-page ad in the Washington Post, but I wish to read a couple paragraphs from this. It's titled Alaska, the Challenge of 78. It says, Alaska poses a great challenge to the nation, challenges to reconcile development with the conservation of natural resources needed for coming generations. Do we have the foresight to meet this challenge before our choices are foreclosed? Alaska is changing fast. By previous decisions of Congress, two-thirds of the state is being opened up for the necessary economic activity. An area equal to in size to Montana and Texas combined will be open for mining, timbering, and oil and gas production. This includes 150 million acres of federal lands turned over to the state in private ownership to be used as the Alaskans wish. This sort of brings to mind that indicates that two-thirds of our state is being dug up, cut down, or built on. That's hardly true. With this generous grant, plus another 45 million acres of offshore tidal lands, Alaska's 400,000 residents are guaranteed a strong economic future. For example, revenues from the first of 23 oil lease areas have already yielded the state more than $1 billion. Healthy. I won't read all this ad for you, but I'll send you a photo of anyone who wishes to see it may do so. Now, there are a number of names connected with this advertising. Some of them are familiar names to all of us. There's the mayor of Tom Bradley. I don't know if you can read on this one. There's James L. Buckley. There's a Governor Dan Evans. There's a Marshall Field. There's a Leonard Firestone. I'm not sure if he's in relation to the Firestone tires or not. Possible. There's a Nancy Kissinger. I think she's the wife of somebody who used to be in power or doing something. There's a Henry Cabot Lodge. There's a Governor Thomas McCall. He's the guy who said, come to Oregon, leave your money, and go home. There's a Governor George Romney. He built automobiles at one time. So Theodore Roosevelt the fourth, and there's several other names on here, and there's one that's a Honorable Michael Miller. I'm sure he's no one that any of us know. Names fairly close, but Mr. Speaker, I don't object to these people advertising. I think they certainly have the right to do so, and I wouldn't call it the big lie approach. They're certainly capable of saying whatever. I am concerned that these ads don't reflect the wishes of the majority of this body, and I am certainly hopeful that our D2 Steering Council is doing whatever they can do to counter this type of advertising.
Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, I might note in partial response to Mr. Urien's remarks that the Steering Council has authorized funds to print editorial type advertisements in the Washington Post, and that will be done very shortly.
Representative Nackack.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor to speak on Talent Church?
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've dealt with a historical subject called the University of Alaska. Board of Regents several years ago saw fit to hire an individual by the name of Mr. Hyatt, who had been in retirement in Hawaii on the beaches of Waikiki and other romantic spots in his elder age. I see where, in my opinion anyway, where this was less than a wise decision, as we are living with some of the administrative follow-ups of this individual's leadership at the university. We've just gotten done with a nationwide talent search where a person of high credence and credibility has turned down the opportunity to lead this multi-million dollar educational function called the University of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, I feel that we, representing the state with the members in the other body tied in with the Board of Regents and the governor, should make a talent search, but focus it within Alaska. I feel, Mr. Speaker, that the talent is available within the state, that we can find talent which can rise to a great Alaskan challenge, that of running on a decent manner, a fiscal manner, the operations of the university. Mr. Speaker, I suggest to us, to the regents, to the governor, to the Senate, that we look within the state for this particular talent. Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, can I have the privilege of the floor to respond to Representative Nackak's stirring observations?
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Bradley.
Well, I'd just like to say for my seatmate and I, and I'm sure others in this body, right on, right on, Al. Thank you.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to respond to Mr. Nackak's observations also.
Go ahead, please.
I would like to second Representative Nackak's observations and point out that there are candidates for the presidency of the University of Alaska within the state who applied originally when Dr. Hyatt resigned, who have never been interviewed by the University of Alaska Regents. They are here in the state and they have never even been interviewed. I know a couple of them, and they're people that on paper at least look very good. They've got all the requisite degrees and experience and so on. I don't understand why the Regents have never interviewed these people. I just cannot imagine why they haven't looked closer to home. They haven't even interviewed these people, and they're right here in the state. So I really agree with Representative Nackak. I think we can find the talent in the state. It may not be people who've already applied. It may be someone new. But I know that there's a wealth of talent here, and I think we can find it.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak to the same subject with a simple specific. The result of the search committee last time around that came up with Humphrey's name, of the 16 finalists, only one was an Alaskan, and he happened to be living in Washington at the time. But that's as close as we came to having any Alaskans in the final considerations, one out of 16.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Without belaboring the point too much, I'd like to have the privilege of the floor to address the same subject for a short moment.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, since we're all offering advice to the Board of Regents, I'm going to second or third or fourth the motion of the comment made by the member from Nome, and also add a few other observations. Mr. Speaker, at a time when universities all over the country were going through university presidents like some people go through dish towels, at a time when there were a great amount of turmoil in our universities in the 1960s, one great institution that I've never had the privilege of attending or visiting, one great institution, Yale College, had no problem at all. Interestingly enough, twice, it's my understanding this is the case, twice they have selected a president from their own faculty. They've actually taken a teacher from the school that they've got right there and made him president of the university. That's how they got Kingman Brewster. Now that Kingman Brewster is retired, that's how they just hired another president. I think he's about 39 years old, and he's a teacher. He is not a guy who has been a professional education administrator. And a professional education administrator who's been administering education for 20 years usually has forgotten long ago what it was like to teach in a classroom or do real research in his own field. one of the things that looked somewhat appealing about the applicant who just turned down the job was that he stated that he might even teach a course in chemistry at the Fairbanks campus if he took the job. I found that very refreshing. But while the regents are looking around, they might look right at home.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, request permission to address the same subject.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I guess all of us have pretty strong feelings about this, and that's why since the subject has been broached, we're all jumping up. But I don't mind adding my criticism to the search committee of the Board of Regents. You know, it really galls me no end that this legislature passed a Alaska hire law, and we're committed to hiring in-state whenever that's possible. And the Board of Regents, as Representative Rudd pointed out, haven't even interviewed those candidates that are applying for the job in the state. I think that that's a real travesty of at least the intent, if not the specific law that we passed here in regards to Alaska hire. And it also upsets me that we really need somebody that has a commitment to Alaska, that really cares about Alaska and isn't coming here because of the $64,000 that they're going to be receiving or because of the status perhaps that being president of a university implies. Somebody that really feels about this state the way this legislation, I'm sure the public feels about it, and cares about the university and wants to and is committed to take whatever problems go along with it and stay in there until we make our university the great system that it could be and that it isn't now in regards to its financial problems. So I think that if I hope the Board of Regents is listening, and I'm sure there are as many people as you can look around in this room agree that that we ought to at least consider those people who are committed to this state and committed to the system and not have someone who's going to bail out after 4 months.
Representative Urien.
Speaker, I'd like to privilege the floor to speak on the same subject.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased that this morning that so many people have stood up on this floor and voiced some opinions about the University of Alaska. I happened to catch the Capital 78 program last night where a member of this body said, and I wish I could remember his words and quote him, but I can't, but something to the effect that the legislature was the most ill-equipped body in this state to handle objectively the problems of the University of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, I don't think that's true. If we're really ill-equipped to objectively handle the problems of the University of Alaska, we're ill-equipped to handle any problem. And I think we can, Mr. Speaker, and I know speaking on behalf of the minority members, we're willing to tackle anything that comes down the pike, and I'm sure you are, and I just want to take this opportunity to publicly object to the statement I heard on TV last night.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like, of course, to run this into the ground, but my name was alluded to without using my name, which I find personally offensive. If somebody wants to allude to me, I'd appreciate them using my name. First name, of course, because I'm sensitive to the duality of the politicians with Bradley. But, Mr. Speaker, I said those words, and I said them regarding this body, and not simply this House, but the Board of Regents and the current administration. And bluster and bravado and boilerplate just want to make whole the simple fact that the University of Alaska is in an educational crisis, and the legislature, the Board of Regents, and appropriate dollars, and the power of the purse string is at least in Western civilization close to 2,000 years old. Why are we in the mess we're in? Simple fact is we are in a mess, and if anybody wants to get going and solve the problems, I'm the first to jump aboard because it is a crisis, and frankly, it's a sympathetic political issue. Along with the minority, I'd just like to volunteer the majority, but I have grave questions, in fact, in a political year, whether whether we can do that good of a job.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, may I also have the privilege of the floor on this subject?
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to point out one thing. Many times you look through a telescope, what you see depends on which end you're looking through. And we're looking at the university from one perspective, kind of from the top down. And everybody has been talking about what horrible shape it's in. Sure, it's true if we look at it from this perspective. But Mr. Speaker, we shouldn't forget there's an awful lot of good faculty members who are teaching good classes, just as they did before the university had these financial problems. There are a lot of students in there who are working hard, spending a lot of time in the libraries and so forth. There are a lot of researchers who are doing the very best they can, and regardless of these problems. And it's very easy for us to talk about the University of Alaska and the horrible shape it's in and forget all those things, simply because the financial and administrative handling of the university has been poor. Now, Mr. Speaker, regarding the initial topic raised by Mr. Nakak, I have recommended to two different regents individually that they hire an Alaskan, that they pick someone who is not an academic, but who is a very good administrator and business type, that they hire this person for, a two-year period as a president of the university, strictly an interim appointment, that being quite clear, until they get their financial house in order and their administrative house in order. Then they go back to, shall we say, normal operations. Mr. Speaker, neither one of those regents that I spoke to responded very favorably to this suggestion. But I think that it's not a question simply of choosing an Alaskan versus somebody from outside. It's choosing somebody who can do the job, and also, Mr. Speaker, an essential qualification, someone who has enough respect in this legislature that the legislature will keep their cotton-picking hands off and give them a chance to do the job.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor to make a comment on the same general subject.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I hear a definite tone running through this body today that I'm quite displeased with, and I don't care for at all. As a matter of fact, it appears to me that everybody knows the University of Alaska is in a large crisis. It has been for the last year. We started moving to solve that problem last year. I think the university has made real strides in the past year. Then President Humphrey resigned, and all of a sudden it's a crisis again and a panic again. Mr. Speaker, I think that the crisis and the panic began last year during the session. Or at least we became aware of it, and we moved at that time to begin stemming the problem. And I think what the University of Alaska needs right now is some encouragement and some help from this body rather than getting up and kicking them when they're down. And I think that's exactly what the members of this body are doing. It's very politically expedient to kick the old University of Alaska right in the backside right now. It's a very popular thing to do, and it's going to get you a lot of votes come November. I think that the best interests of the University of Alaska, education in Alaska, and Alaska as a whole are best served by the legislature refraining from that type of cheap shot and sort of taking a more rational view and attempting to work with the Board of Regents and the University of Alaska to solve our problems.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nakak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to emphasize to Mr. Kelly that I wasn't kicking the university while it was down. I suggested that we look within the state for the talent that's available to do the job, period. And if that's looked upon as kicking the university in the backside, I'm sorry, you have a very poor understanding of the issue.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think people were talking in terms of any cheap shot, and I would have made the same remarks I made with or without the TV cameras or anybody in the gallery, and I think most of the members here would have. We found out about something very upsetting this morning and last night about the fact that the gentleman who was selected by the Board of Regents to succeed Mr. Humphrey turned the job down. We are concerned about it. We know the university is doing a good job. I spent most of my life around that campus, and I feel very close to the university, and I'm not kicking the university. But I'm just hoping that somebody does address the problem and take into account some of the suggestions we made on the floor today.
Representative Greening.
In the absence of Mr. Gardner, are we on committee announcements?
We haven't reached committee announcements yet. Are there any more special orders? There are none. Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Milton Lipton, one of the legislature's oil and gas consultants, is in town, and I would like to advise the members that the Special House Committee on Oil and Gas Matters will be meeting with Mr. Lipton either tomorrow evening or Thursday evening. We'll announce a time certain tomorrow. Naturally, all members of the House and Senate and other interested persons will be invited.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, House State Affairs 115 will be taking up House Bill 488, Redefining Economic Disaster Areas, House Bill 642, Special Appropriation, I believe, 4.7 for mortgage insurance funds, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and possibly several bills that have been up before the committee in the last several days. Thank you.
Representative Rudd.
Community and Regional Affairs will meet tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in room 647 in the court building. We'll take up House Bill 585, the Local Government Study Commission.
Representative Osterbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House and Senate Resource will meet today with the Federal Land Use Planning Commission on Disposal of State Lands at 2 p.m. in Courtroom A. Wednesday, January 25th at 1:30 p.m. in Courtroom A, Mr. Lipton will address the Senate and House Resource Committee on Oil and Gas. And on Friday, January 27th at 1:30 p.m. in Courtroom A, Mr. Lipton will finish up on oil and gas with the Senate and House Resource Committee.
Representative McKinnon.
Commerce will meet tomorrow morning at 9 for hopefully our final meeting on Senate Bill 98, Miscellaneous Amendments to the Banking Statutes.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, today at 1:15, the House Special Committee on the Permanent Fund will meet very briefly in the House Judiciary Committee room.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the House Committee will meet at 3 this afternoon on House Bill 536. State shared revenues for health service in rural areas.
Representative Urien.
The Republican luncheon will be held today at noon in the Baranoff. The speaker today is our own Representative Dankworth.
Further announcements? Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the chairman of judiciary is not here. May I inquire the vice chairman whether there will be a meeting this afternoon?
He hasn't talked to me about it.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Carpenter.
There will be a Judiciary Committee meeting this afternoon at 3, and the subject will be sentencing.
For the benefit of the membership, the look on the back of the daily calendar, they'll see there are certain committee meetings that are already scheduled together with the topics. Is there further business to come before the House?
Several brief announcements, Mr. Speaker. I should have brought this under unfinished business, but it slipped my mind. I'd like to ask unanimous consent, Mr. Speaker, that Senate Bill 118, which is an appropriation bill relative to teacher retirement, be taken from rules and returned to finance. This is at the request of the Finance Committee.
Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 118 will be returned to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask unanimous consent that Representative Brown be excused from the call on January 27th.
Hearing no objection, the member will be excused on the date indicated.
And that Representative Osterbeck be excused from the call January 30th through February 2nd.
Hearing no objection, the member will be excused on the dates indicated.
Mr. Speaker, some legislation we passed last year created the a study group dealing with the subject of a possible withdrawal from Social Security by state and public employees. The task force that was set up to study that will be having a meeting at 1 p.m. at 311 in the court building this afternoon. Any member, of course, that's interested in that subject is welcome to attend. There's no further business to come before us, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask unanimous consent. We stand in adjournment till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, the House is adjourned.